Abram has traveled far. He has wandered in the wilderness. He has visited Egypt in the south. He has been to the far northeastern corner of the Mediterranean. And he has discovered God's faithfulness over years and years. He has been brought to full confidence in the living God. The promises that were made some 25 years earlier have at last begun to be visible as the promised seed. The son has come through Sarah, has been born and has been blessed with health and life. And this has all been celebrated by Abram and his friends. And then an interesting episode unfolds for us in verses 22 and following of the 21st chapter. It relates to a man whom Abraham has met before. Indeed, they have had some close acquaintance. And Abimelech, this king in the region where Abraham is dwelling now, has encountered something of Abraham, has seen something of the way that Abraham lives, has observed something of his priorities, and makes an interesting statement concerning Abraham. It may be that this event, this episode in Abraham's life, takes place at this great feast that Abraham has organized for celebrating Isaac's weaning, a significant milestone in the life of a young child in those days. It may be that because of his prior acquaintance with Abimelech and the proximity in which they lived to one another, that this man has been invited along to participate in these celebrations. We do not know for sure. He may have travelled specifically with this request. But when he comes to Abraham, he says to him, God is with you in all that you do. Why do I say that that's an interesting statement to come from the lips of Abimelech? Well, the reason is this, that Abram's reputation before Abimelech is very mixed. Some have commented that by this time in his life, Abraham has grown in his faith, he's grown in his understanding of God, in his trust in God, that by this event in his life, he has the rough edges have been knocked off his character. And to some degree, that is true. But we need to remember that his previous encounter with Abimelech wasn't 25 years ago. It wasn't even 10 years ago. You see, Abimelech has fresh in his mind the reality of Abraham's lies. He has a negative view of Abraham. The man who was fearful. A man who was so fearful for his life that he would be willing to risk his wife's reputation and character in order to preserve his own life. He had lied about Sarah. Well, perhaps lie is too strong a word. He hadn't told the truth. Claimed that she was his sister in order to preserve his own life. Neglected to say that she was also his wife. We get the reality of this in the other words that Abimelech speaks. He says, Now therefore swear to me here by God that you will not deal falsely with me. You see, on their previous encounter, this is exactly what Abraham had done. He had dealt falsely with Abimelech. Abimelech had a negative view of Abraham in this regard. And yet, Abraham's reputation is also positive. God is with you in all that you do. He wasn't perfect. He had his flaws. He committed his sins. But God was with him. And Abimelech has seen enough of Abram's life to recognize that God is with him in all that he does. That despite his failings, and they are real, God is with this man, Abraham. That is the reputation that Abraham has. And so this man, this king, comes to Abraham and he seeks peace with him. Swear to me that you will not deal falsely with me or with my descendants or with my posterity. But as I have dealt kindly with you, so you will deal kindly with me and with the land where you are sojourned. You see, Abimelech, having discovered the truth concerning Sarah, had given a gift to her, a rich gift that confirmed her character and her innocence in the eyes of all. Abraham had been blessed in this way by Abimelech, who had been kind towards him. And Abimelech has noted that this man Abraham, despite his failings, is nevertheless a man blessed by God. He's perhaps grown in wealth, perhaps grown in influence, and Abimelech looks to the future and he sees that though Abraham is just a sojourner, though Abraham is a kind of a nomad in the land, he travels around from place to place, whereas Abimelech is a king, he is settled. Nevertheless, there's something about Abraham that indicates greatness. And so this king comes to him, concerned regarding the future. What if this man becomes greater than he already is? How will it go with my family? How will it go with my descendants? How will it go with my land? Will this man take over? I have been kind to him. I have enriched him. I have allowed him to live here, to sojourn here as long as he's wanted to. Now, is he going to take advantage of me? Is he going to return my favour by taking my land, taking my throne? And so Abimelech comes to him and he seeks peace. And Abraham responds, I will swear. I will enter into covenant with you. I will promise that I will not take your land and I will not usurp your throne and I will not be a danger to you. But there's a two-way relationship here. And Abraham is no pushover. He has his own concerns. He was, after all, a nomad in a wilderness situation where water was like gold. He had dug a well and found a good source of water for his multiplying flocks and herds. But Abimelech's servants have come along and have by force seized the well. And so as Abimelech comes seeking peace, Abram seeks justice. What about this well? In effect, he says to Abimelech, you want me to act loyally towards you, then what about this situation? And Abimelech responds with claims of innocence. I don't know who has done this thing. You didn't tell me, and I have not heard of it until today. It seems that this is an issue that has been standing for a while. Abram's not raised it before. And Abimelech, according to his own claims, has never heard of it until this time. But Abram persists and says that this issue must be settled. And so he settles it in a like manner to that action of Abimelech in declaring Sarah to be innocent when he had taken her to be his own wife. And in giving that gift to her then, proclaiming her innocence, Abram sets aside 7 ewe lambs of the flock. And he declares that these 7 ewe lambs Abimelech will take as a declaration that Abraham had dug the well, that it was his property, his possession in this land. And so the two men enter into this agreement, and we're told that the place was called Beersheba. It can variously be translated as either referring to the well of 7 or the well of the oath, and it may be that it purposefully has a double meaning, signifying these two aspects to what took place here. And so they enter into this relationship of peace and justice, of promise. And having secured then the security of his descendants, Abimelech departs with Phicol, the commander of his army, and they return to what Moses calls the land of the Philistines. In reality, this isn't the land of the Philistines at the time that Abram is living there, but it was in the days of Moses. And so Moses, writing this, uses the language with which his readers will be familiar. Abimelech goes home. Abram remains where he is. And there he plants a tamarisk tree. It marks the place, and it becomes an emblem to him of this incident. And there he worships God. I wonder, though, whether there's another significance to Moses' report that Abimelech returned to the land of the Philistines. You see, we think of the Philistines as a godless people, don't we? We think of the Philistines as that people who were constantly at war with Israel. Through the days of King David, they were at war. In the days of Solomon, too, they were at war. And we think of them then as this godless nation. I wonder whether Moses' choice of language not only helps his generation to understand the geography of where these events are taking place, but also tells them something about the hearts of the people. You see, here is a man who worships God, and here is a man who goes back, returns to his godless existence. He acknowledges that the one man has a reputation for having God with him, so that he's blessed in whatever he does. He wants to ensure that he has a right relationship with this man who has a reputation of having God with him. But this particular man goes away, departs from the godly man and his God. Abimelech is, at heart, a Philistine. It's an interesting episode. And we'll see as we progress through this book that things don't quite turn out the way that Abimelech hoped. Not for any failure on Abram's part. It was not the descendants of Abraham who failed to keep the promise, but it was Abimelech's own descendants. In the 26th chapter of the book of Genesis, we read of another Abimelech. It is assumed that he is a descendant and not the same man. The way that the name is written in the Hebrew text suggests that certainly at a later date of copying the manuscripts, he was assumed to be a different man, a descendant. And in this chapter, we discover that these descendants of Abimelech had filled in the wells that Abram had dug. We're told in verse 12 of chapter 26 that Isaac sowed in that land and reaped in the same year 100-fold. The Lord blessed him. The man became rich and gained more and more until he became very wealthy. He had possessions of flocks and herds and many servants, so that the Philistines envied him. Now the Philistines had stopped and filled with earth all the wells that his father's servants had dug in the days of Abram his father. And Abimelech, this Abimelech, said to Isaac, "Go away from us, for you are much mightier than we." The covenant of peace that was broken by the ones who initially had wanted peace, and kept by the descendants of Abraham. Now, how are we to understand this little story, this episode? Well, I'm sure there are a number of lessons that we could draw out from it, but there's one that I want us to think about briefly this evening as we conclude. And that is to think about this statement that Abimelech makes concerning Abraham. Abraham has a reputation. God is with you in all that you do. As I said, he's not a perfect man. It's not long since that Abimelech had real evidence of Abraham's flaws and failings and sins and faithlessness. But nevertheless, God was with him. That was his reputation. A reputation not based upon Abraham's worthiness, but upon the grace of God. Abraham, as we've seen in our studies, was a no one. He was called out of a heathen city, a worshipper of idols, called by God. He responded to the call. We've observed that various promises were given to Abram, and Abram, to varying degrees, believed those promises and doubted those promises. And over the years that have passed, we've seen Abram growing in his understanding of God's dealings as new revelation has been provided concerning the promises. First, he's called to go, and the promise is God will give him a land that he will show him. Arriving at the land, he is instructed to walk through the length and the breadth of the land. This is the land. And so the revelation provided with a simple promise is filled out with a realization of where the land is. He's promised descendants. A nation will come from him. And then he's told that he will have a son. He himself will father a son. It won't be by the legal inheritance of a slave, a servant in his house. Then he is told that it isn't the son that he fathers by a concubine, but it is the son that he fathers through his wife. And so this revelation progresses and is made clearer and clearer, and Abraham's faith in God grows and grows, and we are not surprised. Though it is surprising to some degree that Abimelech acknowledges it, we are not surprised to hear that God is with Abraham in all that he does. The question I want to ask, though, is how much is that true of you? What kind of a reputation do you have? I'm not suggesting that you need to be perfect. You understand me, don't you? I'm not saying that we have to live such a holy life, such a perfect life, that there is no sin evident in us. Abraham's sin was evident, but it was also evident that God was with him. I'm not asking you whether you have a reputation as a holy person in the sense of never breaking the law, having a perfectly clean driver's license, always doing the right thing at work, always making the right decisions at home. I'm asking, is it evident that God is with you? Is it evident that God is at work in your life despite your mistakes, despite your flaws and failings? That someone could say of you, please don't deal falsely with me. You've done it before. I know what you can be like, but God is with you. God is with you. You see, what I'm asking is the gospel and the power of the gospel evident in your life? I'm not asking, you see, whether you're a Pharisee, like so many of the leaders of Jerusalem in the day of Jesus, who kept the law to such a degree that I'm sure would amaze us. Jesus spoke about the righteousness of the Pharisees in a positive way, not just a negative way. We immediately think of the hypocrisy of the Pharisees, don't we? But Jesus also spoke about the righteousness of the Pharisees that excelled. Paul also spoke about that righteousness. He claimed to be one of the best of the Pharisees through his keeping of the law. You see, I'm not asking whether you are a person who is law-abiding to the degree the Pharisees were. I'm asking whether it is evident in your life that the grace of God is at work, that God is with you. You see, Jesus spoke about the Pharisees as hypocrites. On the outside, what were they? White, shining, pure and clean. But what did Jesus call them? Whitewashed sepulchres. The abode of the dead. Do we have a reputation that God is with us? That God is working in our lives? We stumble, we fall, we make mistakes, we sin. Do we cover it up? Or do we allow the grace and mercy of God to be evident? Abimelech noted that God was with Abraham. God's blessing was upon Abraham. But despite Abraham's faithlessness at times, God continued with him. And we can stumble and fall, as I've said, and God can still be with us. You see, our standing with God is not based upon our works. It's not based upon our faithfulness to Him. It's based upon His call upon our lives and His grace and mercy towards us. But is that evident in your life? Do you have a reputation that God is with you? You see, the book of Zechariah, we've looked at the book of Zechariah a number of times in our studies in the book of Revelation, and we've seen the connections between Revelation and Zechariah. Now in that book of Zechariah, Zechariah talks very much about the future. He talks about the way that God is going to work, the way that God is going to vindicate Israel, the way that God is going to be merciful and restore and cause Israel to prosper. Now let me make a connection between Abraham and this book of Zechariah, and it's not a direct connection in the sense that we've seen between Zechariah and Revelation. It's not that the Bible distinctly draws this line, this connection between the two. I've made the connection simply in terms of the words, the language that is used. But I think it's a significant connection for us as we consider the reputation that we should have. The restoration of Israel following their exile in Babylon was to a large degree a type, a symbol, a picture of what God was going to do through the work of Jesus Christ in bringing the church into being, building his temple not out of stones but out of people. Living stones. And building a nation not out of one ethnic group, but out of people from every tribe and tongue who have been born again by the Spirit of God and united together through faith in Jesus Christ. And these words then that Zechariah presents to us here from the Lord look beyond any immediate fulfillment that they may have in national Israel under the Old Covenant, and have a symbolic significance for the church. And here's part of what is being said by Zechariah. In verses 20 and following, thus says the Lord of hosts, people shall yet come, even the inhabitants of many cities. The inhabitants of one city shall go to another, saying, let us go at once to entreat the favour of the Lord and to seek the Lord of hosts. I myself am going. Many peoples and strong nations shall come to seek the Lord of hosts in Jerusalem and to entreat the favour of the Lord. Thus says the Lord of hosts, in those days 10 men from the nations of every tongue shall take hold of the robe of a Jew, saying, let us go with you, for we have heard that God is with you. We have heard that God is with you. Do you see a significant difference between what these people are saying in Zechariah and what Abimelech said to Abraham? Abimelech said to Abraham, God is with you in all that you do. So far it's the same. But what did Abimelech do? He went back to the land of the Philistines. He recognized that the hand of God was upon Abram. It caused him some fear and trepidation that this God who seemed to be having an increasing reputation for power, that this man, having the favor of God, may be a danger to him and his descendants. So he seeks peace. And then he goes back to his old life, goes back to his old ways, continues living the way that he did before. It made no difference to Abimelech. And that's borne out by the fact that his own descendants are the ones who break the covenant promise that was made with Abraham. But what's happening here is that people are noticing God is with you. And what do they want to do? Let us go with you. My point is this. Do people see in you the hand of God at work? Not only do they see the hand of God at work in you, but are they drawn to God themselves as a result? As they witness the grace of God at work in your life, your imperfect, flawed, sinful life, as they witness the grace of God and the mercy of God at work in your life and see that, yes, despite this person's failures, God is with him. God is with her. And they want this God. They are drawn to this God. This is what the book of Revelation declares, that the people will be drawn in from all the nations as God's favour is bestowed upon his people. Do we have the reputation that God is with us? The real, true, solid reputation that God, the holy God, is with sinful people and blesses them with peace? Or do we have a front of religion like the Pharisees? It's dead inside. And it will never draw anyone to the Saviour. Do our lives display the blessing of God at work in such a way that people say, I want what this person has. I want the peace that this person has. I want the confidence for the future that this person has. I want to know the God that this person knows. I want to have the forgiveness that this person enjoys. I want the blessings of salvation that this person has.